audiobook.com.
Well, it's everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Monday, September 12th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We'll go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me here today to kick off a new week of Bang the Book Radio. You'll hear from me for the first half of today's show. I'll talk World Cup of Hockey. I've been handicapping that tournament here over the weekend, so I'll have some good thoughts on that for you. Also chat some Major League Baseball here as we make sure that we give baseball its time to shine, because, you know, throughout the week here on Bang the Book Radio, we cover a lot of football stuff. So just want to make sure that we give baseball some airtime as well. Second half of today's show, Kyle Hunter, huntersportspicks.com, will join us. Couldn't join us last week after the birth of his second child, but he's back in the saddle here this week, so we'll be able to chat with him about some college football stuff. Really good week three slate. We'll talk about some of those big games. Also talk about a team that has miffed the sharp players here so far this year. We'll discuss how to approach that team based on a listener suggestion who actually asked me about this specific team. A few announcements to get out of the way here before we talk about hockey and baseball. First, we're going to be changing things up a little bit over at bangthebook.com with regards to the posting of the radio show. I told you last week that we've been starting to cut some of the segments down, post them to Spreaker. We're going to do the same thing over at bangthebook.com now. So instead of posting the full audio file, we're going to post these as snippets. We're going to cut the segments down. So, you know, today's segment with Kyle Hunter, that'll be a separate segment. Tomorrow's segment with Brad Powers, that'll be a separate segment. Same thing with the Gridiron Gambling Report on Wednesday. Both Tony George and Sports Cheetah's segments on Thursday. And then the Super Contest and Brent on Friday. So we're going to separate things a little bit. Hopefully this is a little bit easier for you, you know, because you're going to have these shows parsed down into 30-minute or thereabout segments as opposed to the full, you know, broadcast of the show. But, you know, we'll see how this goes. We'll see if this type of format works better for everybody. So instead of, you know, the long recap and all those types of things, we're just going to have everything split down into smaller segments at bangthebook.com. Now, for those that want the full-length show all at once, we're still going to keep that format on our Blog Talk Radio channel, blogtalkradio.com/bangthebook, and also that automatically uploads to iTunes. So you can still get the full show as long as you subscribe to us on iTunes, but you can also get the smaller segments if that's something that's a little bit more convenient for you. So we decided to make that change. We'll see how it goes. We'll see how it plays out, but, you know, we're always trying to enhance your reader and listener experience over at bangthebook.com. So, you know, we're going to cut these shows down into some shorter segments over there, and you can you know, do whatever you want with those, but certainly we hope that you continue listening. Our listeners have been flocking back. It appears from our analytics data that we're picking up new listeners as well. So for those of you that are new to the show, thank you very much for joining us. We really hope that, you know, you take as much out of it as we put into it, if not more. We try our best to have a variety of different topics of different sports, things of that sort. We try to hit all of the betting markets that we can. That's why we have golf analysis. We had NASCAR analysis for quite a while there, but now with football, you know, unfortunately, we had to cut some things out. But we also have UFC analysis. We'll hear again from Jay Primetown on Thursday here after he did very well with that UFC 203 card. So plenty of things going on here on Bang the Book Radio. Make sure you're going over to bangthebook.com. Check out those sportsbook reviews. Again, I mean, it's not too late to sign up. A lot of them still running really good promo code deals. And, of course, you get exclusive promo codes if you sign up through bangthebook.com. So plenty of things to check out over there at the website. Plenty of great content on a daily basis. We make sure that we try to have a one-stop shop for all of your handicapping needs. And I feel like we do a pretty good job of that over there at bangthebook.com. So I guess we'll start with the baseball stuff here since I've got baseball reference open and some of the other things that are going on in the world of baseball. A couple of interesting statistics that I want to throw your way here to kick off this segment. First, this one from Patrick Dubuque on Twitter. There are only five teams in the American League that aren't at least five games over 500. So basically what we're seeing here in the American League, and, you know, this was something that was pretty interesting to me heading into the season. I looked at the American League. I saw a lot of teams that, you know, were probably going to win about 80 games. And we'd see what happened with variance in terms of, you know, the other 15 or 20 games with those teams. And it's played out a little bit differently than I anticipated, because you've got Tampa Bay, who's 60 and 82. I thought they would be significantly better here this year. I figured they'd be at least, you know, 12 to 15 games better than they are right now. You have the White Sox and the Twins, people have been beating up on the Twins all year long. They've got 90 losses already, the most in baseball by two over the Atlanta Braves. And then the Angels and the Athletics. Heading into the season, the Rays and the Athletics were the only two teams, based on the futures odds, based on the season win total odds, that nobody expected those two teams to have a shot at the playoffs. And it turns out that it's happened that way. Both of those teams sitting 22 games under 500 right now at 60 and 82. The Twins, that was one of my biggest season win total suggestions in my previews. That one obviously has come through in a very big way because they've got a very legitimate shot here at losing 100 games. But you know, you've got four teams in the American League East with at least 76 wins, at least 10 games over 500. The Yankees 76 and 66, Toronto with 78, Baltimore with 78, Boston with 80. In the Central, you've got the Indians with 83, Detroit's 10 games over. The Royals are six games over with 74 wins. A couple of teams at 75 and 68 in the West, Houston and Seattle, Texas 85 and 59. So, you know, even though there's not a whole lot left to handicap for this season, I don't think, you know, I mean, the odds makers have a good idea of these teams. We have a good idea of these teams. Some of them will fall off the pace and, you know, just kind of mailed in for the rest of the year. Others have a lot to play for. But what you want to start doing now at this stage of the game, you want to be ahead of the curve. You want to start looking for those teams heading into next season that you can look to fade. You know, just jot some of these notes down. Obviously, you're not going to do a ton of major league handicapping for next season because there will be trades. There will be transactions. Of course, there's free agency. It's not a good free agent crop this year, but there are some guys that will help some of these teams. But you want to start looking around for some of these teams that, you know, you think you can look to fade next season. Some of those teams that have done really, really well from a Pythagorean win-loss standpoint, some of those teams that haven't done well. Team I've talked about all year long here. I will continue to talk about this team, especially as we head into the playoffs. The Texas Rangers. This is a team that is currently 26 games over 500 with a run differential of plus 21. You just don't see that. That's not something that happens. And when it is something that happens, you look for regression the following year. This is a team overachieving by Pythagorean win-loss by 11 games. And I haven't looked at base runs, but I imagine it's a lot worse. How about this? The Rangers this season, they have a plus 47 run differential at home. They are 47 and 22 at Globe Life Park this season with a plus 47 run differential. They are one game over 500 on the road with a minus 26 run differential. So this is a team that has gotten remarkably lucky this season. And again, I've talked about them a lot. I'll talk about them as we head into the playoffs. 31 and 10 in one run games, 756 winning percentage all year long. That's been one of the best in baseball history. So again, as you're going through and looking at some of these teams to fade for next season, those are some of the statistics you want to look for. Record in one run games, you know, for one thing, teams that struggle in close games, the following year, they probably made some bullpen improvements. You know, they've probably gone out. Maybe they've done some things organizationally where they move some starters to the bullpen or they commit a large amount of free agent dollars to the bullpen. You know, we see it year after year with these teams that lose a lot of close games. And, you know, that's something that can adjust the following season. And it's certainly something that does adjust the following season. I mean, let's take a team here like Tampa Bay, for example. 60 and 82 on the year. Pythagorean win-loss of 67 and 75, so they should be seven games better than they are. But they are 12 and 21 in one-run games. 12 and 21. They're 17 games under 500 when they face a right-handed starter. So you know exactly what Tampa Bay is going to do this offseason. They're going to look for cheap platoon options on the fat side of the platoon, and they're going to look to strengthen that bullpen. Now, to be fair, Erasmo Ramirez has had to throw a lot of high-leverage innings. I don't think that that was a move that they wanted to make. Brad Boxberger was hurt for a while. So, you know, there are little things that you want to make sure that you're looking for here as you're trying to explain the reasons why teams are having bad seasons or why teams are having good seasons. But now is the time where you want to start looking at some of these things, because what's going to happen is some of these teams are going to do a lot of things in the offseason, and they're going to make a lot of moves. The team that wins the offseason rarely wins the regular season. That's something that you really need to keep in mind. The teams that get a lot of buzz going into the year because of the moves that they made, because of the transactions that they made, you know, they don't always do all that well. Take the San Francisco Giants, for example. You know, they did some really good things, picked up Johnny Cueto, picked up Jeff Samardzija, who hasn't been very good for them. They're three games back behind the Dodgers. Now, look, they're in position to win a wild card, and they should make the playoffs, and I believe that they will. But, you know, this is a team that had very, very lofty expectations. I believe, you know, their season win total was up in the 84, 85 range. They should get there, but, you know, this is a team that a lot of people were looking for a lot more from. How about the Arizona Diamondbacks? Remember how they won the offseason? They got Shelby Miller. They signed Zach Greinke. You know, they were doing all these great things. And yeah, AJ Pollock got hurt. And yeah, David Peralta's been out all year. But this is a team that is 58 and 84 at this stage of the game. They've given up 5.7 runs per game this year. They're just not a good baseball team. Now they've got more friction in the front office. You know, it's not enough just to go out there and get those big name brand players. You also have to put them into situations where they can succeed. For Arizona, haven't been able to succeed. But look, when you get a team that was that bad, and they're going to be that bad, and they're not a rebuilding team like Cincinnati, like Atlanta, you know, they're just a bad baseball team. At some point, there's going to be value in going on the other side of a team like that. Probably a similar thing for San Diego, who's 59 and 84 this year. Again, not really in a rebuilding phase. AJ Preller just hasn't put the right pieces together, and there's just not enough pitching talent on this team. So, again, you want to look from the bottom up when it comes to looking at the offseason, you know, because you want to look at these teams that have maybe gotten really unlucky, have maybe had some really bad injuries to key players. You know, all of these things are very important here with the baseball season. And I know that we're all focused on football. You know, we've, of course, been very focused on football here on Bang the Book Radio, but you can start planting some of those seeds for next season. That's why the Twins were one of my biggest season win total plays this year. One of my biggest, you know, suggestions in the preview pieces, because that's a team last year that went 83 and 79 and really overachieved. They didn't have the Pythagorean win loss or the one run record. But, you know, when you looked at that team, you could just see that there wasn't a whole lot of sustainability to it. So maybe the regular signs weren't there, you know, of overachieving, of record in one run games. But believe me, you'll spot these things if you go through and start looking for them. So I know that I'm really putting the cart before the horse here because we still have about 20 regular season games left to go and then, of course, playoffs. But, you know, the way that these lines come out nowadays, you definitely want to make sure that you're prepared sooner rather than later. As far as the present goes for Major League Baseball, it's tricky. You know, we don't really have a division race in four of the six divisions here. So a lot of people focused on the wild card race, the race in the American League East, and then the race in the National League West, which, quite frankly, there's really not anything to get excited about there because I think both of those teams will make the playoffs. San Francisco's up a game and a half in the wild card chase. They would currently host that wild card game against the New York Mets. For a lot of teams, you know, going to that wild card game doesn't really matter to them. It's hard because it's a one-game sample, and there's so much that can go wrong in that one game sample. But for a team like the Giants, they're not really worried about it. You know, it all depends on how their rotation lines up and hopefully they're able to line it up the right way and get a guy like Bumgarner or Cueto on the mound, as opposed to having to trot out a Matt Moore or a Jeff Samardzija, something like that. We may see them make some subtle changes to the rotation to try and set things up that way. They don't have a ton of margin for error to do that, but you know, that may be something that Bruce Bochy in the front office tries to do a little bit here. But in terms of teams that, you know, you want to look to follow or teams that you want to look to fade, this is something I like to try and do when I do some of this Major League stuff. I think it's really hard right now. I think that the teams you want to follow are the bad underdogs that aren't getting a whole lot of love. You know, I talked about that stat last week, Sports Insights Twitter feed. It was something like, you know, underdogs getting less than 35% of the money have been plus 20-something units in the month of September. That's just how it goes. You know, a lot of the sharper players, a lot of the professionals have put baseball on the back burner. You'll still see some line moves periodically, but they're all focused on football. The people that are still playing baseball right now are predominantly public players that have gone back to playing baseball because they've gotten back into their sports betting accounts for football season. So the bad teams, the heavy underdogs, are the ones that are going to carry value here this time of year. And that's part of the reason why I don't like betting September baseball that much, because it's really frustrating and it can beat you down betting on those bad teams. But if you can isolate them, if you can find them, maybe it's a situational spot. Maybe it's a good team coming off of an emotional series against another good team. You know, maybe you can pick one of those spots off. For me, really, at this stage of the game, it's almost exclusively situational capping. You know, and if I don't have a situation that favors me, then I won't look at the game. I won't play the game at all. You know, for the picks and analysis piece, I still try to give you insight into the pitching matchups, you know, into the offenses, things of that sort. But you've got to get very selective here this time of year. It's kind of nice that it coincides with the start of football season where you've got more betting options out there because there's just not a lot in the Major League Baseball market. You know, you don't know, are the managers for the bad teams going to put unproven guys into high leverage spots late in the game? Probably. You know, are they going to push starters a little bit or, you know, put kid gloves on the young starters and kind of limit their pitch counts? Probably. You know, there are just too many difficult dynamics to handicap in baseball right now for me to really talk about fade and follow teams. You know, you really just want to look to fade and follow situationally. You know, maybe a young team loses a tough game that they put a lot into. They don't have anything to play for. Well, they're probably not going to show up the next day. Or the day game after a night game thing. You know, that's really all I can suggest right now from a baseball standpoint is to look at these things, you know, in a situational vacuum and try and go from there. Be right back after a quick note from DSI Sportsbook.
This segment of Bang the Book Radio is brought to you by BetDSI Sportsbook. DSI is one of the industry leaders in customer service, wagering options, and is offering Bang the Book listeners a $10 free betting account just for signing up. Simply sign up with a promo code BANG10. Again, that's BANG10 and get $10 free today at BetDSI.
Take advantage of that BANG10 promo code over at DSI Sportsbook. Also pick up a 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. Another option that we have along with DSI is Galaxy Sports. If you head on over to bangthebook.com, click on the Galaxy Sports link, sign up using the promo code BTB for Bang the Book, BTB. Get a 100% deposit bonus over at Galaxy Sports. So give them a try. Not necessarily one of those really household well-known brands, but they are backed by the same people as DSI Sportsbook. So it's part of the Chris family. So you can take advantage of a good promo code offer there. So talk about the World Cup of hockey here. You know, for our new listeners or possibly, you know, old listeners, I do like to focus on the NHL side of things. You're not going to get a whole lot of NHL betting content really anywhere out there. So I've kind of taken it upon myself here at Bang the Book to do a lot more NHL study than I've done, you know, in past years. And I think that we were really, really successful with it last year. Somebody asked me if I'm going to do an NHL piece like the MLB picks analysis piece that I do. Maybe I will. That is something I will consider. But for right now, we're looking at the World Cup of Hockey. This begins here this weekend at Air Canada Center in Toronto. At this point, I've gotten a really good look at four of the eight teams here in the field. And I feel like that gives me a really good head start to handicapping this tournament. As far as the odds go, right now at DSI Sportsbook, you've got Canada minus 129. If you look over at BetOnline, Canada plus 120. So like anything else, make sure that you shop around for the line value here on this tournament. But at DSI, you've got Russia plus 431, the U.S. plus 559, Sweden plus 617, the North American under 23 team plus 1236, Finland plus 1448, Czech Republic plus 3500, Team Europe plus 4000. So the four teams I've seen so far in this tournament, Canada, U.S., North American under 23 team, and then also Team Europe. I can tell you of these four teams that I've seen so far, one of them has a chance to win this tournament. That is Team Canada. You know, I was a player in the USA Hockey organization growing up. I was a referee as well in USA Hockey for about 6 or 7 years. Haven't done it the last couple of years. But, you know, I've been really impressed with the development of the U.S. program in general. And what's nice about this current U.S. team is that the old guard has moved on. You know, a lot of the older players that used to be fixtures on Team USA, a lot of guys that were slow of foot, you know, they were well-known NHL guys. They were big-bodied guys. But when they took on these more skilled teams, they had a lot of issues. The U.S. program is really going in the right direction. they've done a fantastic job. I love the core that they have here, you know, the core that they're building, you know, for these tournaments. Their goaltending is fantastic with Jonathan Quick, Ben Bishop, and Corey Schneider. The problem here is, and this isn't just because I saw the U.S. get outplayed twice by Canada over the weekend, they don't have – I'm trying to figure out how to word this because they've got skill. They've got skill. They've got tenacity. They've got physicality. I just don't think that they have the team speed to play with Canada or Russia. They don't have the savvy to play with Sweden or, you know, maybe even Finland. I mean, we'll see how they fare against Finland. These two teams play a preliminary game on Tuesday night, which will be my first chance to get a good look at Finland. But, you know, as much as I love the USA team, as much as I support USA hockey, there's just not quite enough there yet. Now, Canada does have home field advantage for this tournament. These two teams do have a shot of meeting in the gold medal game to make it through the semifinal round. But the thing for the U.S. is, you know, I feel like there's not enough of a speed and skill game for them in a tournament like this. You know, over the course of a long tournament, goaltending can win you something. You know, we've seen goaltenders really carry teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs. In the U.S., I would say in terms of goaltending power ranks, they're probably second or third in this tournament. But unfortunately, you know, I didn't really like the way that the defensemen were playing in the games against Canada. Once Canada really got it going, the U.S. had no answer for them. Now, they did win in Columbus. It was a, you know, pretty emotional game, very physical game. But for the U.S. team, they don't have the depth of skill that a team like Canada has. And it was kind of disappointing to watch because I know the USA is right there on the cusp, but I also don't think that John Tortorella is the right type of coach for this environment. Tortorella wants his teams, and I've seen this with the Blue Jacket, with the Columbus Blue Jackets here over the last couple of years. Tortorella wants his teams to be really tough and physical and tenacious, but that takes away some of the creativity. In a tournament like this, when you're talking about a team of superstars that don't play together a whole lot, you don't want to change too much about the way that they play. And unfortunately for the U.S. team, I think that too much is being changed about the way that they play. Now, they're at their best when they're forechecking really well. That's what Team USA is right now. Because they lack skill relative to some of the other countries, they need to forecheck. They need to be opportunistic offensively. They need to score on the power play. They've got guys that can do that. But to do it consistently, I don't know if that's going to be the case here in this tournament. So in watching the USA and Canada, Canada is the only team that I saw out of these four teams, you know, that can win this thing. I love the under 23 team. I love the speed and the skill that they bring to the game. I love that some of the young American players are going to move up and really challenge for the Olympic spots because there's a significant amount of talent there for 2018. But they're not the problem here with this team. There are a couple of them. For one thing, these national teams, most of these guys have played together. The under 23 team, some of them have played together on world junior teams for U.S. and Canada, but on the whole, they haven't played together a whole lot. Defensively, they've got some issues. They've got some guys that are really, really good NHL players, but in this format, you know, I saw Seth Jones get pushed off the puck way too much. I don't think Matt Murray can stand on his head enough to really help this under 23 team. So I didn't see a whole lot there from them defensively and in their own zone that would think that they can win this tournament. For Team Europe, just a hodgepodge of guys thrown together from a bunch of different countries. Again, there's just not going to be enough continuity there. There's also not the goaltending there. That's why they're the longest shot on the board. Canada really impressed me, as they should. I mean, they've got the biggest talent pool to pick from. They've got a tremendous coaching staff. I think Mike Babcock is the perfect guy to lead this team because Babcock, dating back to his days in Detroit, he had that mix of skill and tenacity and role players, and he had everything. He knows how to handle all of those different types of personalities, and he knows how to help personalities like that have success. This is a team that's remarkably talented. Carey Price is as good as anybody in net now that he's back and healthy. Braden Holtby, of course, is fantastic. Canada is the team to beat here in this tournament. I think at plus 120 over at BetOnline, they're absolutely worth a look. Now, when you talk about the other teams, the teams that I haven't seen yet, the Czech Republic, Finland, Russia, and Sweden. As far as I can tell, you know, based on watching Canada there for a couple of games, to me, in my mind, Russia is the only team that challenges them in this tournament. If this tournament was played on international ice, I think Russia would be a really, really good value pick in that 4-1 range. Actually, at Bet Online, they're plus 650. They're the second favorite at DSI, but they're plus 650 over at Bet Online. Russia just brings endless skill and speed to the table. The way that you beat Canada is that you take away their transition game. The way you can take away a transition game is with speed. The reason the U.S. didn't have success with it is because once Canada exited the zone after the forecheck, the U.S. was playing catch-up. They were chasing a lot of odd-man rushes, and there's just too much skill for Canada if you've got, you know, a lack of numbers going into the defensive zone. Russia, on the other hand, they're going to play a high-risk, high-reward type of style here in a tournament like this. That's how you beat a team like Canada. If you try to play structure with Canada, Canada will beat you at your own game. The Russians, they play with a level of structure that, you know, they didn't really, you know, have maybe a decade or two ago. Of course, they had plenty of structure, you know, when we were talking about the Red Army teams. But what they do now with their speed and their skill level, so much in transition, so much of their offense generated from transition, but they don't forecheck a ton. So what you get is you get the speed to match up with the other teams in the neutral zone. If you slow Canada's transition game, it's a lot more difficult for them. If you make Canada play three zones, which they're not really used to because they're used to dominating, you know, the main two zones, then that's how you can beat them. So I think Russia, you know, I mean, there are some goaltending questions. We'll see how Sergei Bobrovsky does. I think he'll probably be the starter since he was the guy that got the nod in their first prelim game. You know, a guy with Columbus that's at times really carried that team. But I feel like in terms of this tournament, Russia is the team that's got the best shot to knock off Canada. So Russia plus 600, actually plus 650 over at BetOnline. I think that's a really good value price. There's some upside to Sweden. I mean, Sweden is a team that large amounts of skill. They do a lot of, they're a very detail-oriented team. They've got some quality goaltending. I don't know if it's as good as it could be here for this tournament. It's hard to count out Sweden in international competition. They've had a lot of success here lately. You know, they've kind of been that second fiddle to Canada in terms of, you know, how teams have done getting the gold medal games and things like that sort. You know, for the Swedes, they don't jump off the page. You know, they're a very, I don't want to say underwhelming type of team, but they just go about their business. And then all of a sudden you find yourself down, you know, 3-2 in a close game late. And they do a really good job of putting games away. But I just don't know if the way that this Sweden team is comprised, if they have enough, you know, to go and play with the Russians or with the Canadians. So for me, as far as I'm concerned here, I would take Canada to win this thing. I would take a value play on Russia, and really that's about it. And I'll get a chance to look at Finland here on Tuesday night, so maybe I'll have some different thoughts about Team Finland. I love the way that the Finns play hockey. I've talked about that before here on this show. You know, they're just, again, very detail-oriented, play in all three zones, a lot of great two-way players. You don't see that a lot of times here, you know, in these tournaments like this. You kind of see guys that excel offensively or defensively. For Finland, very well-rounded set of players, but they just don't have the high-end skill that to go out and win a tournament like this. So I wanted to give you some thoughts on the World Cup of Hockey here. I know that it's not really drawing a ton of attention, but it will be on ESPN, so maybe that'll help it get some more attention. And of course, you'll probably want to have some action on it then as well. But just wanted to give you some thoughts on that, because I will be working here. Actually, I don't see them anymore, but I did see some NHL team wins over at Bet Online, or maybe I saw them at Five Dimes, one of those two. But I will have my NHL preview series. I'll have to start firing those up here because we've got less than a month until the start of the season. But I will have some really in-depth NHL previews for you, taking a look at some futures odds, team wins, over-under point totals, whatever odds are available to me at the time. So we'll have some NHL stuff coming your way here in the lead-up to the season, probably here on these Monday shows where I generally tend to only have one guest since it's tough to get guests coming out of the weekend. But you can look forward to that, and hopefully, you know, this isn't a waste of time for our listeners out there. I imagine most of you tune in for the football stuff, but hey, money is money, and wherever we can win it, we're going to try and do that. But we will get over to the football side of things here. Bring in professional handicapper Kyle Hunter of huntersportspicks.com. Mr. Hunter, how's it going today, my friend?
Going good, man. With the newborn here at home and busy season, I'm running on fumes a little bit, using a little bit of extra caffeine the last few days. So if I sound a little different, that's why. But as most new dads would say, I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah, how is everything going? Everything going well so far?
Yeah, things are going well. You know, just staying busy. A lot of late nights, kind of the night shift guy here. So, you know, just a little bit less sleep, but I can trade that in for a while.
Well, we got plenty of stuff to get to here for college football, and I want to start by talking about the Wisconsin Badgers. I had a listener reach out and ask, you know, what's going on with this team? You know, when are the sharp players going to catch up to the fact that Wisconsin is apparently better than they thought? I mean, we saw LSU get money in week one. Wisconsin beats them at Lambeau Field. Saw Akron a lot of money last week, pushed through 24 down to 23. And Wisconsin just went out and blew them away in the second half. So I kind of want to look at this more in a general sense, using Wisconsin as an example. But two straight weeks where sharp money has been against a team, at what point do you think we start to see adjustments from both the odds makers and the bettors?
I think pretty fast. But, you know, I know mainly we're going to talk about this in a general sense, but specifically about Wisconsin. You know, I wonder a little bit about Wisconsin. I just, you know, LSU, are they as good as people thought? And then Akron, you know, I think Akron's probably a pretty bad team this year. So I'm not exactly sure that Wisconsin is a great team just based on those two wins. I know the win over LSU is a really good win, but LSU getting some really poor quarterback play, switch over to Danny Etling. You know, Wisconsin has some things in their profile that are not going to be sustainable. Opponent third down conversion 3 for 25 so far this year. Certainly not going to be able to keep up that. You know, that, or 3 for 20 actually, 15%. But you know, Wisconsin is a team to me that certainly is better than they look like it would be. You know, I think their win total was set at 7. So Chris has done a good job getting them ready for the season. You know, I think he's a coach that the jury's been out on a little bit, and I think that's why the sharp players are kind of coming up against Wisconsin. And Wisconsin really has a tough schedule coming up. I mean, look at who they play consecutive weeks in a row. Four games in a row, Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, and Iowa. And then even after that, not an easy schedule there for a while. So we're going to find out a lot about Wisconsin. So, you know, specifically about Wisconsin, you know, I'm not really sure. I don't want to overreact to this. And I think, you know, in a more general sense, what I would do, you know, if I had been against Wisconsin in those spots, and I haven't been on or against Wisconsin either way, you know, I think it's more likely that I just want to pass on their games altogether to wait and see further into it. And I actually think that's what most sharp players are going to do after this, just kind of leave them alone for a little while. You know, there are a lot of games to pick from on a given Saturday. And I feel like if you've been off on a team, you're far better off to just go ahead and pass and see, you know, maybe I was wrong, instead of trying to switch and go to the other side too hard, you know, because it's still only been two games. You know, I still think that in week three, it is easy to overreact.
I'm really curious to see what happens with this number between Georgia State and Wisconsin this week, currently sitting 34. I mean, Georgia State, you know, not a great team down there in the Sun Belt. But for Wisconsin, as you mentioned, their schedule gets really crazy after this week. They're at East Lansing to take on Michigan State. They're at the Big House on October 1st. They have a bye week. Then they host Ohio State, then play at Iowa. So, you know, I'm really curious to see what happens with this number this week. And if they go out there and blow out Georgia State, and let's say they play close with Michigan State, you know, I'll be really interested to see what happens with their numbers over the next 3 weeks, particularly if we do start to see some sharp money go against the Badgers here again, you know, anytime in the near future.
Yeah, I will too. I mean, I think Wisconsin will certainly get more respect. Like you say, when you have that many sharp players against the team, there's going to have to be a reaction to them. The other thing to point out, this is something we talk about with college basketball too, is that a team like Wisconsin is going to get respect a lot quicker than a team that's way under the radar. So, you know, Wisconsin, there is going to be an adjustment there, because even though Wisconsin's not, you know, the biggest name brand out there, obviously Wisconsin's had a lot of success in the last few seasons. The books have to adjust to a team like that. So I do think we'll see a pretty big adjustment. Like I said, you know, myself, I'm probably going to be passing on their games here for a little while, at least on the side. You know, as a team in general, I like playing unders with Wisconsin just because they play so slowly. They play good defense. They really can't throw the ball very well. So, you know, that's the way I'll look at Wisconsin personally. But, you know, I think there will be a pretty big adjustment.
Well, and you and I have talked about the Bet Online openers for both football and basketball here throughout the more than 3 years that we've been doing content for bangthebook.com now. And, you know, Wisconsin opened 28 at Bet Online on Sunday afternoon, and that number immediately shot up to 31 within a little over an hour. And then now it's sitting 34 where the rest of the market opens. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But obviously, the Bet Online odds makers weren't ready to buy in with Wisconsin yet, because even though it's from 28 to 34, I mean, a 6-point adjustment is pretty big here. And I know that Bet Online kind of throws out some lines and sees what kind of nibbles they can get. But, you know, I got to say, I mean, if this number gets north of 35, honestly, I'd be really tempted to take Georgia State here just because of what Wisconsin has on the horizon and the fact that they largely blew out Akron because of the second half. I mean, that was a 30-10 game going into halftime, and then they really put some cosmetic touches on it in the second half, which I don't think that they'll do, you know, 1 week prior to taking on Michigan State.
Yeah, I agree with you. First of all, that minus 28 was a really bad line there. Those are fairly common with Bet Online, like we've said before. But, you know, once if it gets to 35, and I think it probably will, actually. I think 35.5 is a good chance, especially with it jumping to 34 this quickly. And like we said, you know, people are going to remember that Wisconsin covered the spread by a big number in both of their games here. I think both public and sharps are going to remember that. Like I say, I think a lot of sharps are going to stay off their game. I think the public is going to play Wisconsin in this spot no matter what. You know, the public's not going to take Georgia State plus the points. So, yeah, with their schedule coming up, my only lean would be toward Georgia State.
So in terms of looking at this a little bit more in general here, you know, I mean, we talk about not overreacting to what you've most recently seen. We're only 2 weeks into the season. You know, so are there teams that you've kind of really made big adjustments on based on what we've seen over the first 2 weeks?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's several teams that I've adjusted quite a bit. Louisville is a team that's been a big adjustment. You know, I had Syracuse last week, and I'll just say that that was a bad pick. You know, I thought that was a bad spot for Louisville going into the Carrier Dome. I was getting more than two touchdowns with Syracuse. Syracuse's defense couldn't do anything with Louisville. Louisville is one of the biggest teams that's moved up in my power rankings. This is a team that, you know, I think Jackson, I knew he was going to be better this year. I didn't know he was going to be this much better. Louisville has a lot of talent on defense. If you look at the other side of it, Arkansas State, a team that I thought would be a lot better than they've been so far this year. I'm very surprised they've played so poorly. I actually thought last weekend, that's another play that I had, was them against Auburn. That was a bad play, too. I had a good week one, bad week two. I think quite a few people that are pretty good at this did poorly in week two. You know, I think that in general, Arkansas State, you know, they got a lot of these transfers in. They also lost their offensive coordinator, and their offense just doesn't have the flow that it had last year. So I'm going to be laying off on them for a little bit, but I'm definitely downgraded them quite a bit.
Arkansas State in a very interesting spot. They go and play in the altitude against Utah State this week. They're a 9.5-point dog, so that should be a very interesting situational spot there for the Red Wolves. But we'll go ahead and get into the four games that we want to look at in depth a little bit here today, and we'll wrap up with our pick six segment at the end, which is six games, rapid-fire fashion, usually some real ugly ones in there. So we'll see what today's pick six segment holds. But we'll go to Thursday night. Houston takes on Cincinnati. Houston, of course, riding the wave of that big week one win over Oklahoma. Should get Greg Ward Jr. back in the lineup here this week. We've seen this one push right on through a touchdown. It's sitting 7.5 here. And I think a big reason for this, and I imagine a lot of people are going to think that this number is a little bit short, but keep in mind here that a lot of people loved Cincinnati in the AAC going into the season.
Yeah, and I was one of them. You know, Cincinnati is a team that I still think is going to be better than people believe. You know, they had a bad week one where they played an FCS school and didn't play well at all for quite a while. A decent win last week at Purdue. Cincinnati, though, a very underrated home field advantage. I think that's a really important thing in this game. Cincinnati, I would say, deserves, you know, 4.5 points for home field advantage. And that's more than I would give most teams. You know, this is a spot where, you know, you could talk about this in a bigger context, but I think that, you know, some people have said that home field advantage might have been overrated in college football, and, you know, giving too many people 4 or 4.5 points would be overrated. But I do think that Cincinnati deserves it, and especially in this kind of situation. I mean, look, at this is going to be the lone game on Thursday night. Definitely going to be a packed house. Very good environment for football. I think Cincinnati is one of those teams that, also, if you look back over the past few years, in the past 10 years, they've been a home dog 10 times. They're 8-2 against the spread in those 10 games. Also, last year, Cincinnati outgained Houston 589 to 427 yards on the road. They lost that game because they were negative in the turnover differential, like they were a lot of the games last year. You know, I think that the Cincinnati offense has a lot of potential. They lost a lot of receivers, so that hurts them quite a bit. And obviously, you know, I'm not a big fan of fading Tom Herman, so I'm not really excited to say this, but at the same time, you know, you give me more than a touchdown on Cincinnati at home, I have to take the home dog in this one.
I think this is a really difficult game to handicap because you had Houston pick up that big win. Now they get into conference play, have to go to Cincinnati, which I agree with you. It's a pretty quality home field advantage. Also, short week, Thursday night, the fan base, the student section should be really into this game. I look at the Bearcats, and I was kind of kicking myself for not playing them last week, laying 6.5 at Purdue, because I still don't think Purdue is a very good team. They covered the number. They won by 18, but take a deeper look at that game. Purdue had 504 yards of offense. They turned the ball over 5 times, also missed a field goal in that game. So that was kind of a misleading final score. I know you're writing a misleading final scores piece for BangTheBook.com, so maybe that's one that could wind up showing up in there. But you know, Cincinnati still gave up 500 yards to Purdue last week, and nobody thinks of Purdue as an offensive juggernaut. So I think that that's why this number has pushed through the 7. There are a lot of variables and unknowns to this game, but you also have to wonder a little bit too here with Cincinnati. I mean, high expectations coming into the year. You can say what you want about Tommy Tuberville and the quarterback situation between Hayden Moore and Gunnar Kiel. But if you're Cincinnati, I mean, this is the game that you've had circled all off season long. This is the one that you've been looking ahead to. Do you feel like that's kind of contributed to their performance season to date so far?
I do. I think that this is definitely the game they've had circled. And yeah, that's going to be one of the ones that's in the misleading final scores. To say that for the article, to say that though, I will point out that sometimes you can have a little bit of a misleading box score. And it's one of these games where Cincinnati was ahead 31-7 in the fourth quarter and then gave up a ton of yards there in the fourth quarter to Purdue. So I think that's one of those where it was a misleading final score in that it was 38-20. It certainly should have been closer than that. Purdue 29 first downs to 22 for Cincinnati. But at the same time, Cincinnati was in control of that game. You know, when you get 5 interceptions thrown by Purdue, obviously they're going to be. But, you know, that's one of those games that you could look at it either way. You could look at the misleading final score. You could say that the box score is a little bit misleading as well if you watch the game. You know, Cincinnati was 13 of 21 on third down conversions last week, but they also gave up 10 for 17 on third down conversions to Purdue. You know, I think Cincinnati's a team that, you know, has really good quarterback play, obviously. And I think their running game is better than most people think. I think Cincinnati will be able to run the ball in this game. You know, their question mark is at the receiver spot since they lost so many people. And, you know, how can they stop Greg Ward Jr. in that offense of Houston? You know, I'm not convinced that Cincinnati is going to stop Houston really well in this. And honestly, you know, I'm not convinced that Cincinnati is going to win the game, obviously. But I do think that that's a lot of points to give a team like Cincinnati at home. You know, I think Tom Herman's a better coach than Tuberville in this one, if I was going to give a coaching edge. But I do think that Tuberville's a pretty decent coach, and he's done well at home over the long term. Cincinnati's been a good home team. So, to me, this is one of those games where Cincinnati circled it for a long time to get this many points. And honestly, I think you'll probably get more than 7.5. So, if you like Cincinnati, you probably go ahead and wait a little bit.
I don't want you to have to give away a premium play here just in case it winds up being one when the total comes out. But what sort of, you know, if you could give us a range, you know, like low 70s, mid 70s, some kind of thing like that, where do you think this total comes out? Because, I mean, we just talked about Cincinnati giving up, what, 10 of 17 third downs and 500 yards to Purdue. Houston, we know they can score. Cincinnati's got offensive pieces. I mean, is this going to be a number, standalone Thursday night game, public flocking to the over? I mean, are you going to have the fortitude to bet the under or what? Where do you think this number comes out?
You know, I have to be honest, you know, on a Monday morning, I don't totally have all my totals projections ready to go. That's something I'm going to finish this afternoon. Just without going through them all, I would say that, you know, this will probably be an upper 60s number, just because Cincinnati's playing a little bit slower this year, a little bit more of a pro-style offense than they've had in the past. You know, they're still relatively quick tempo. Their defense is a little bit better than they've been in the past, at least. That's what I think preseason. That's what I thought. Like you said, they gave up a lot of yards against Purdue, so we'll see about that. Houston's offense, they're pretty quick, but so far, actually, so far this year, they've been better on defense than on offense, if you look at the stats. You know, I think Houston, you know, they didn't play all their best players last week. I think Houston's going to put up a lot of points. I think Cincinnati will put up plenty, too. I think 70 would be a little bit too high, but no, I really don't think I'm going to play the total on this game.
Well, move over to a big game on Saturday in the SEC West. You've got Alabama at Ole Miss. Alabama laying 9.5 here. You know, we know what's happened here the last 2 years in this game with Ole Miss beating Alabama. With Ole Miss catching 9.5 at home, I'm going to be very interested to see where this number moves.
I'm curious. I don't know. I wonder what the game of the year line was here. It couldn't have been 9.5 for Alabama. I know that Ole Miss, you know, is one of those teams that's been a really good home team in the past. This rare double revenge spot here for Alabama. This is a really tough one for me because I feel like I'm not getting any value on Alabama, so I'm probably not going to take them. But I'm certainly impressed with Alabama so far this year, especially their defense. That pass defense has been tremendous. You know, you look at what they've done so far this year. I know Western Kentucky is from a small conference, and, you know, they should beat up on Western Kentucky. And Nick Saban was unhappy that they didn't play better than they did. But, I mean, they really did a good job stopping that passing attack last week. And then in week one, USC just could do nothing against Alabama. Offensively, you know, I think this Alabama team has a really good quarterback there in Hurt. I mean, he's a good playmaker. He's going to be a guy that is a big name for quite a while here for Alabama. And to me, one of the other keys of this game is which Chad Kelly shows up. You know, I know Chad Kelly in the preseason talked about he was the best quarterback in the country. He played really well for the first half against Florida State. And then the second half, you know, to be honest with you, I feel like Chad Kelly was the biggest reason they lost that game. You know, he has a lot of talent, but he's not very consistent, and I don't like that in a quarterback. Also a big coaching edge here to Bama. You know, I think both teams are plenty motivated for this game. I don't think I can make myself lay 9.5 points on the road in this game because, like I said, I don't feel like that's any value. But at the same time, I don't really like taking Ole Miss here either.
In terms of the games of the year lines in May, South Point opened this one, Alabama -3. When the Golden Nugget opened in July, it was Alabama -6. So we have seen a bit of an adjustment here. I mean, Alabama just completely dominated Southern Cal. And I know Southern Cal is not a great team. It was a neutral site game. But Alabama just imposed their will against a really athletic team. And, you know, that's something about Ole Miss here. I mean, Ole Miss, like you said, you don't know what kind of Chad Kelly you're going to get. You don't know what kind of Ole Miss you're going to get. This is a tremendously talented team, tons of athleticism, but they're very inconsistent. And it's kind of amazing that they've beaten Alabama back-to-back years with the lack of structure that I feel like the Rebels, you know, have on both sides of the ball. Now, they have had some big losses. Maybe this is where they show up with the Kemdichie brothers moving on, Laquan Treadwell, of course, moving on. So maybe this is the game where that really shows up for Ole Miss. But it'll be interesting to see where this line goes because I think Alabama has gotten the respect that it needs with the way that they've had to rebuild this season. At Ole Miss, everybody knows that they've beat Alabama back-to-back years. So people are probably going to flock to that number that looks like it's a little bit high. So, I think this is a game that you probably do want to stay away from. But it's going to be one of the more fascinating ones to watch from a market standpoint and also on television on Saturday.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So far, 71% of the bets are on Alabama. And there's been quite a bit of action on this game. I think it's the second most bet game so far this week compared to only Ohio State and Oklahoma has more bets on it than Alabama and Mississippi. So this is definitely an interesting game. I really don't know where this line's going to go, to be honest with you. I mean, I think if it hits 10, you're going to get some people taking Ole Miss +10. But I also think that the public likes to take Alabama a lot, and, you know, I can't really blame them with what they've seen so far this year. So I'm not really sure what to do with this game. It's going to be a pass for me. Like you say, one of the reasons I like to pass a lot on Ole Miss's games is because I don't know what they're going to do. They can be really good. They can be really bad. I like to have some consistency and know what I'm going to get from a team. I don't know what I'm going to get from the Rebels, so I'm going to pass here.
Yeah, I don't really know either, but it's certainly going to be one of those games that could really shake up the college football playoff picture, with Ole Miss already having that Florida State loss, and then Alabama, you know, if they get dealt one here, we'll certainly have to see how things play out, because LSU already with that loss to Wisconsin. So that kind of opens up a little bit of everything, looking way down the line here for the college football playoff. So I know that there are a lot of really marquee games this weekend. We'll cover one more with Ohio State and Oklahoma here in a couple minutes. Try to spread these out to all the handicappers that we're going to have on this show. And there are plenty of games to discuss here for this week. But I want to talk about this one with you, because I think this one's become very fascinating. Pitt, +6.5 against Oklahoma State. And we all know how Oklahoma State lost last week. So this is a really interesting spot. I mean, does Oklahoma State battle back and pick a big win and a cover here? I mean, Pitt had a nice win over Penn State last weekend. A lot of things going on with this game as well.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, you know, we've done this long enough that I almost know some of the games that you're going to pick ahead of time. I knew you were going to pick Pitt and Oklahoma State just because of the spot here. I think that Oklahoma State is in just this really tough spot to respond. I will say that, you know, Oklahoma State's been one of these teams that covered the spread really well the last few years, and I think Mike Gundy is an underrated coach. Oklahoma State's 30-16 against the spread in their last 46 as a home favorite. You know, that's a really hard game to call from last weekend, because I will say, Central Michigan, it wasn't a fluke that they were in the game. And really not a fluke that they won the game, but I know that they shouldn't have based on the rules. So that's a tough one to take if you're Oklahoma State. I had Central Michigan in that one. That was one of my good plays last weekend. That line was definitely out of control at +21. But, you know, Oklahoma State, to me, they have a good quarterback. It's a good system. You know, their defense gives up a lot of yards. They try to be opportunistic, bend but don't break. If you look at Pittsburgh had 341 yards rushing last week. And I have to say, just as a fan, I love seeing James Conner succeed for Pitt now. That's a tremendous story there. You know, and on the other side, it surprised me that Pitt gave up 332 yards passing Penn State. I know Penn State has a new, faster-paced offense, and McSorley did a good job in that offense last week. But I was surprised that Pitt gave up that much. I know Pitt won. They didn't cover the spread against Penn State. They had a huge lead, gave it up. You know, this is a contrasting styles game. We talk a lot about those in college basketball. This is one of them in football. You've got Pitt, who plays really slowly, one of the slowest in the country, and runs the ball. You got Oklahoma State, who wants to pass it a lot and wants to play fast. You know, I hate to sit on the ledge too many times here. Hopefully we'll have some in the pick six that I like. But I really don't want to play this game. I really have no idea what to do with this game. You know, I usually would be tempted to take Oklahoma State in this spot, because I do feel like Gundy can have his team bounce back. At the same time, I really do respect Pitt. I like Pat Narduzzi a lot. So, again, I'm going to pass on this game. The only way I'd get involved in this game would be a total.
What I think is really interesting about this game is you do have to have Oklahoma State bounce back, and Pitt had problems defending the pass, and Oklahoma State can pass. And you have to wonder how much Oklahoma State's going to like playing a really physical game against Pitt. You know, I mean, it was a draining week for them. Certainly they've got a chip on their shoulder now taking on Pitt. They play at Baylor the following week, so could be a little bit of a Big Ten conference or Big 12 conference look ahead spot for the Cowboys here, although I think losing last week kind of takes that out of the equation, which is another thing. I mean, where is this number if Oklahoma State wins? Let's say they cover against Central Michigan, or let's say at the very least they win by a couple touchdowns. You know, is this number north of 7? I'm kind of curious to see if there was an adjustment, or maybe this number opens lower and Oklahoma State actually got a bump because people figure they're motivated. I don't know. It's a lot of interesting dynamics in this one as well.
Yeah, one thing I want to point out about this one is, you know, like I said, I want to give some of the market percentages and some insight here to try to help people out. It's interesting. So far, 60% of the bets are on Pittsburgh in this one, but 65% of the money is on Oklahoma State. So maybe just a slight sign of sharps being on Oklahoma State early in the week. It's hard to tell on Monday morning too much, but it's certainly interesting to see that the majority of the money is on Oklahoma State with the majority of the bets on Pittsburgh.
Well, one more game to discuss here, and then we'll go to our pick six segment. And this one's fascinating for a lot of reasons, but also because of what the games of the year lines look like. You've got Ohio State taking on Oklahoma, 7:30 Eastern kickoff in Norman. The Buckeyes are laying 2.5 here in this spot. The number at South Point in May was Oklahoma -9. The number at the Golden Nugget in July, Oklahoma -6.5. So this is a really significant adjustment early on through just 2 weeks of the season.
Oh, yeah, massive adjustment. I have to say, I was surprised when I saw this line. I would have been really surprised by anything over Pick'em. I thought that this one would be around pick. You know, I knew there'd be an adjustment based on how the two teams have played so far this year. But this is a really, really big adjustment. You know, obviously I'm a Buckeyes fan, so I'm rooting for Ohio State in this game. I think everybody who's listened to the show very much in the past knows that we're both Buckeyes fans. But, you know, I can look at the game and say who I think has value without, you know, putting on my Ohio State fan hat. But, you know, I think this is one of those spots where I'd really hate to lay 2.5 points with Ohio State in this game. I think Ohio State has more talent than does Oklahoma. Ohio State, though, is still an inexperienced team. JT Barrett's a really good quarterback for them. He needs to be a little bit better in the passing game than he's been so far this year. I think Ohio State was really flat that first half last week against Tulsa. It pulled away in the second half just because their running game got going so well and Tulsa's defense is so bad. You know, in the first half, Tulsa's coaching staff really aided the fact that it was 20-3 at halftime, just some terrible calls there when the bad weather was coming. But, you know, Ohio State has some things so far this year that are not going to be able to keep up. Ohio State's 16-27 on third down so far this year. Obviously, that's not going to keep coming. Ohio State has some really good team speed. I think that's their biggest strength this year. They have team speed at every position, and obviously, Ohio State always has team speed, but I think they have more this year than they normally do. They have an advantage there. They have an advantage as far as the coaching spot. But Oklahoma is still a team that was in the Final Four last year. Oklahoma has a lot of experience, is a good team at home. You know, I guess if I had to play this game, I'd take Oklahoma. I don't really like either side that much here. I just think that this is too big of an adjustment to take Ohio State in this one.
It is a significant adjustment. And, you know, I mean, look, Ohio State scored 125 points in two games. And you can debate the merits of the teams that they've done it against. And, I mean, for Bowling Green, real transitional year with the big coaching change. And for Tulsa, I mean, the two pick sixes right before halftime really changed the dynamic of that game. There are two things about this game that stand out to me. One, Ohio State has a huge coaching edge with Urban Meyer against Bob Stoops. Bob Stoops has had a hard time winning big games. Everybody knows that. This is a big game. This is a game that Oklahoma absolutely must have to get into the college football playoff once again, especially with that loss to Houston. The other thing, the aforementioned loss to Houston, came against Tom Herman. And everybody knows Tom Herman was the Ohio State offensive coordinator. So people are just assuming that the Buckeyes are going to have tons of, you know, offensive success here against Oklahoma because Houston did a good job moving the ball. One other thing that stands out here, Ohio State lost pretty much everybody from the secondary last year. Almost all those guys went pro. Garyon Conley, the only holdover from the starters on that part of the, team. Going up against this air raid Lincoln Riley offense, that secondary finally gets tested now. And I'm really curious to see how guys like Marshawn Lattimore do in this really big environment. So this is a game that's a scout's wet dream, but I really don't think it's a great game for handicapping at all. But like you said, I mean, with the huge line adjustment, it's hard to say that there's value on Ohio State, even if those +6.5, +9 types of numbers weren't available to most of the people in the market.
Scout's wet dream. I like that. Yeah, I mean, I think Ohio State and Oklahoma in this game, this is one of them. I think there's going to be a lot of points. You know, the Ohio State defense hasn't been tested that much because of the situations they've been in. You know, Tulsa couldn't do what they normally do because of the weather this past weekend. Bowling Green's offense seems to be a lot worse than last year. Ohio State wants to play a quicker tempo they haven't really done it so far this year, but when you're winning 7-7-10, you know, when you're winning games that big, you're going to slow the tempo down. So I think this could be a pretty quick-paced game. I think both offenses have a lot of success here. So this is a game, I guess if I had to play anything, I'd probably play the over.
Well, we'll see what that total comes out. And, of course, you can follow Kyle at KyleHunterPicks on Twitter. We'll get into our pick six segment here for this week. We pick six games pretty much at random. Just sort of throw out some thoughts on them here with some free picks. And like Kyle said, hopefully he's got some stronger opinions here on some of these games. But we'll start Friday night with a real ugly one, with a big road favorite, Arizona State, 18-point favorite against UTSA.
I'll take plus 18 on UTSA. And this one is ugly. I mean, you know, this is a UTSA team that doesn't have much of an offense. I think their defense is a little better than most people think. I wonder how excited Arizona State's going to be about this game. And Arizona State, you know, played really poorly in their season opener. I can't lay 18 points with them on the road, so I have to take the home underdog.
Yeah, I have to be interested, too. I mean, it's a short week for them coming off of that shootout against Texas Tech, which would probably be more high scoring than a basketball game between the two teams. And also, they start Pac-12 play the following week against Cal. It's really not a good spot for Arizona State to go out and lay a huge number, which is what they have to do. So we'll see. I think UTSA definitely has a little bit of value at that price. How about this line? Miami minus just 3.5. There's actually a 3 out there in the market as well against Appalachian State.
This is a really hard one. You know, 82% of the bets so far on Miami, and yet the line has moved down. So that tells me quite a bit. Gosh, this is a really hard one. I don't even know what to do with this. You know, Appalachian State has a good defense, but you're still talking about the Sun Belt. You know, the Sun Belt's a big difference from where Miami normally plays in the ACC. If Miami's interested in this game, and I think they probably should be, it's hard for me to not lay the points there. So this is definitely not going to be a premium play. This is just a very slight lean, but I'll take Miami here.
There's so much intrigue to this game. I mean, of course, you've got Mark Richt at Miami, who, you know, was in the SEC East with Georgia, knows all about Tennessee, saw how much Tennessee struggled with Appalachian State. I mean, that should get his team invested in this game. I don't know if it will, but it should. But, man, that's a really sneaky line. And like you said, looks like the sharp action early on, taking the Mountaineers there in little Boone, North Carolina. So, man, what – that's a crazy week three game, highly underrated week three game too, especially with such a really strong schedule here for this weekend. Noon kickoff, College game day in town, Florida State, 3-point favorites against Louisville.
Oh, great game. I'm really looking forward to this game. I'm going to take Florida State. This is not a strong play either. It's one of those spots where I think that Florida State really showed a lot in the second half. Florida State's only question mark to me is their offensive line. If their offensive line doesn't play better, they could struggle here in this game. But Louisville, you know, they got to do it against a better defense here. And Florida State really has a lot of talent. And this is a team that I think has a very, very high upside. Florida State's a team that I actually think could win the championship overall. Love the quarterback play they got there in that first game. Francois was just amazing. I'll take Florida State with Francois and Dalvin Cook having a big game here.
This is a really tough one to try and figure out. I mean, at what point do you feel like Louisville's getting too much respect? Because now they've done, you know, really incredible offensive things. There's all kinds of stats out there about Lamar Jackson and the Louisville offense compared to every other FBS team in the country. There's a lot of steam for this Cardinals team. And at some point, you know, you have to figure that maybe – gets to be a little bit too much. Is it this week? I don't know. Is it later in the season? I don't know. But, you know, this is another one of those games where it's just so interesting to see what happens with these games from the summer until now. And looking at this one here, you know, you had Florida State minus 3 in the games of the year. That's exactly where it still is. So that really stands out to me. So like you, I think I would have to lean Florida State there in that one. San Diego State's a 10-point favorite at Northern Illinois, but for the Huskies, Drew Hare, done for the season, broken ankle. San Diego State just going to go in here and roll over, or does Northern Illinois have a little bit of heart and willpower left?
You know, this is a tough one. I would have taken Northern Illinois if they had a healthy quarterback there. San Diego State, barely held on against Cal last week. That was really a good finish. I think that San Diego State has probably had too much for Northern Illinois here, with Northern Illinois being shorthanded. Northern Illinois is not a very good defense right now. And on offense, they're going to run it pretty consistently. San Diego State's defense is pretty good against the run. Really, they're pretty good in general. Cal had a lot of success against them last week, but I don't think very many teams are going to do a lot against San Diego State. I don't really like laying 10 points in this spot, but I do think that it's justified here, so I'm going to take San Diego State.
Yeah, that's a really tough one. I mean, Drew Hare, once Northern Illinois figured out a quarterback last year, things got a lot better for them. But now with Hare out, who was clearly their most productive quarterback last year, it's going to be really, really tough for them. I kind of wonder if a team in that situation just looks forward to conference play and kind of punts that non-conference game. I think that could be something that we see there, because it's not like they're a group of six New Year's Day bowl team, group of five New Year's six team, you know, or have a shot at the college football playoffs. So maybe they just try to do things to get ready for conference play. Texas A&M, +3.5 at Auburn. There's a sneaky little line.
I'll take Texas A&M here. You know, I'm still not sure that Auburn's that good. Maybe Arkansas State's just that much worse than I thought they were. And Texas A&M, I think their defense is better than people think. You know, really good defensive coordinator there. They improved a lot last year. I think they're going to be improved again this year. Obviously have a ton of talent on the offensive end. I don't love Knight, but at the same time, he has so many good players around him. I have to take the underdog in that game.
It's a strange line. A little bit of early line movement on Texas A&M. Texas A&M with that win over UCLA to kick off the year, you know, you'd think that perception would be a little bit higher on them than it currently is. Gus Malzahn doesn't have a quarterback that's capable of running this offense. And I, you know, Texas A&M's a defensive team now, as crazy as it is to say. So I like the Aggies here in this one. And of course, you know, with some of the moves that they've made on the defensive coaching staff, this is one that they should be very well prepared for. I got to throw you this one because this game really stands out to me. Buffalo +10.5 at Nevada.
Wow, that's an interesting one. That's definitely the craziest one you threw me of the bunch this week. I'm going to take Nevada in this one. This one I really don't know what to do with either. I actually do like Texas A&M quite a bit in that last one. It's probably my favorite of the ones that we talked about. I think that Nevada and this one's my lean just because I'm very low on Buffalo. Buffalo really is a team to me that I think is going to struggle in the MAC, and so far what they've done this season would make you think that they're going to struggle. Nevada, not really a team I'm high on. I actually probably would like the over in this game better than anything else, but I'll take Nevada for the purposes of this.
I just think it's weird. Buffalo loses its home opener to Albany. Now they have a bye week and then go all the way out to Reno and play in the altitude against Nevada, who comes back from losing in South Bend against Notre Dame. So not a great situational spot really for either team here in this one. But, I mean, Buffalo going out almost a cross-country trip. Guys going to Reno, which, you know, some of the older players may have a little bit of fun with that. I got to look at Nevada here in this spot as well. So we didn't get too many strong plays here on our segment today, but you have an exclusive free pick for our listeners?
You know, I'll tell you, I see the line just got worse. My exclusive free play just moved here in the last few minutes that we've been talking. I'm going to take Middle Tennessee State this week against Bowling Green. I actually bet -4, and now I see it's -6. So I don't like it as much as I did. I still like Middle Tennessee there, though. I think Middle Tennessee has a really good offense this year. I think they're going to roll up a lot of yards, a lot of points against Bowling Green. And Bowling Green's way too one-dimensional for me this year. They can only throw the football. That plays into the hands of Middle Tennessee State. Middle Tennessee State, not very good stopping the run, but they have a pretty solid secondary. I like the hiring of James Franklin. Tony Franklin, I think it is, yeah, as the offensive coordinator there at Middle Tennessee State. And I think Middle Tennessee State, you know, they really have a good quarterback for that system. It's Doc still. So I think they go in there as a road favorite and take care of business.
Well, terrific insight today from Kyle Hunter, huntersportspicks.com. What's going on over there at the website right now?
Well, I want to do a couple things here. I had somebody reach out to me about this, and first of all, I want to say, too, I had a few people from the show reach out to me me being a new dad. And I just wanted to say I really appreciate that. You know, several people from the show reaching out to me there. Definitely have some quality listeners. And then I wanted to say that I'm going to try something here. I haven't done this before, but I'm going to do a kind of a customer appreciation thing. If you've bought from me in the past at all, send me an email, kyle@huntersportspicks.com. Obviously, I'm going on the honor system here. Just kind of let me know where you bought from and request a free premium pick if you don't have my picks right now. Just kind of a freebie for people, a free premium for people who have purchased before that maybe couldn't purchase this year. We're going to try something new there. So we'll see how that works out. Like I said, on the honor system, please don't send me a bunch of emails if you haven't bought from me in the past. But I'm going to try that one out. And then also the free pick newsletters is something I wanted to push a little bit here. 24-10, the last 34, split my two free picks this past weekend. You sign up for that at huntersportspicks.com. I had Wyoming on Saturday. That was really a tough one to lose. I have to say they were losing by 7 going into the fourth quarter. And then, like 5 turnovers in the fourth quarter against Nebraska, something like that. Did win yesterday with the Saints team total over. So 24-10, the last 34 free plays there. Sign up for that. Usually get 2 plays per weekend for free. And I think that's a solid thing to sign up for if you haven't already.
Well, Kyle, appreciate your time as always, man. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, look forward to it. Thank you.
I know that segment ran a little bit long there with Kyle, but you know, a lot of things to get to here on what's going to be a very good week 3 of the college football season. We'll get to more of those good things on Tuesday's show with Brad Powers of BradPowersSports.com, also with Kyle Kensing of CFBHuddle.com. So we'll have you covered once again for week 3 of the college football season. Well, that'll do it for us, everybody. Thank you very much for listening, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.